You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Subjectivity in halacha. It's the heart of psak, the heart of halacha, the heart of Torah Shebaal Peh. When it comes to a din d'oraita, you're all familiar with the Gemara in Aveidah Zarah, the psak of the Rambam, and start of Hilchot Mamrim. Anytime there's a suffix d'oraita, we go l'chumra, we are stringent. Suffix d'rabbanon, we go l'kula. When you deal with the vast expanse of responsa literature, 90% of the questions deal with rabbinic questions. Inevitably, there's machloket. This is part of Torah Shebaal Peh. When you open up the first Mishnah, the young men coming home, our teachers used to tell us a sheva brachas. When I taught the bracha to my students, I said, gentlemen, you can take it either way. They're coming home from partying or coming home from a sheva brachas. And it was after midnight. They wanted to know if they could still say the Shema of Avit and be Yotzei. And right away in the first Mishnah, there are three different opinions. And this is the beauty of Torah Shebaal Peh. It lends itself to another question which I allude to, I don't want to discuss in depth, but when we have young children, we teach them the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Back in Israel, whenever I daven in the Shtiblach, min Chamariv, in Katamon, I'm davening with an Ur Einikel of Rav Shlomo Gansfried, the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, I grew up in it. When I was a kid, I knew it by heart. But there is a problem with the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He's very monolithic. He makes you feel there's one opinion, one way to go. Child grows older and he can become and remain very narrow-minded. And anyone who thinks differently than the Kitzur and his lifestyle is an oisvaf, an abikores, a pushtak, whatever language you refer to him in. Or are we better off taking a child and teaching him their varied opinions? That way, when he grows older, he can have his own opinion, but he will be respectful of others. Of course, then you always run the risk. If he feels there's so many opinions, he won't accept authority. So this is a delicate question. I've dealt with it in my classes. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, dealt with it in the Gush. It's a delicate question. In Israel, we're a little bit more fortunate because Ashkenazim and Sfadim breed down each other's back. So the Shulchan Aruch that was written in Tel Aviv by Rav David Halevi immediately gives you two opinions on every topic. Now, with this being said, subjectivity, various opinions, what does subjectivity mean? Of course there's subjectivity. And all of you here have seen that subjectivity. Erev Pesach, when you buy egg matzah, preparing for Pesach, many of you go away. I've often told my students, we'll come to a generation where no one will know how to prepare for Pesach because everyone is going away to these magnificent hotels that change from tafis to klat kosher and entertain hundreds if not thousands of people for Pesach. But those of us who still prepare for Pesach, there are two ways to do it. Did you ever see people Erev Shabbos? Mori Rebbe used to talk about in America we have Shomrei Shabbos, we lack Erev Shabbos Jews. I've seen people, if Shabbos is beginning at 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, they're in a mad rush, and the oven and the refrigerator, what has to be done, and the lights. Oh my gosh. They fall over Shabbos with a minute to spare. There are other people. By 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the Rav once described Haslavich, the Hasidic Yidden there, the Chabadnikim. He described how if Shabbos began at 4 o'clock in Russia during the winter, By 1 o'clock, they were Shabbistic. They already had gone to mikveh. They were in their Shabbos kleidah, their Shabbos clothes. They were saying Shir Hashirim. Same thing with Pesach. There are people who wait for the last minute. I've seen people in Erev Pesach, the dishcloth and the towels and this and that, and they're running. My wife and I have a different system. Our grandchildren will laugh at us. But we're Pesach 4 days before, 5 days before, a week before. Can I hire in the state of Israel? No problem. No, what do you do for matzah, for lechem? You can't eat bread. The house is kosher at Pesach. Erev Pesach can fall on Shabbos. My children all have pikdah on the terrace. It's a miracle that the terraces don't collapse in Israel. Erev Pesach shechal b'Shabbos. But I can't do it. I'm a nervous guy. Chametz. So we have egg matzah. And I buy egg matzah. The egg matzah is delicious. And then comes Pesach. And as my grandchildren describe it, tragedy has struck. No bread, only matzah. And we can't eat egg matzah. And you look at your neighbor next door, or my Talmidim from the Eidot HaMizrach, was Rabbi Kasoler in the Kollel in your time, after your time. He got up, Rabbi Kasoler in Boca Raton today, he got up in the class and said, I laugh at all of you, Rabbi. You guys have to look what you're buying. I can walk up and down the aisles on Erev Pesach and buy everything. No problem. Rice, beans, egg matzah. Now, what's the problem with egg matzah? So, without going into detail, you will know it's a sugyim psachim, a homachloikis, Rashi, Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam. Egg matzah is not flour and water. It's flour and a fruit juice. It could be they add water. Tremendous machloket. When you mix flour and water, you have 18 minutes before it becomes chametz. Right or wrong, anyone who's baked matzah, all of you know there's a time clock in a hand matzah bakery. At the end of 18 minutes after you put the water and flour and mix it, 18 minutes later it has to be out of the oven. When it comes to the big machines, Manischewitz, Streitz, Israel, Yehuda matzah, Carmel matzah, so there, of course, you don't have to worry about 18 minutes. The whole process from the time the flour and water are mixed to the time you get a finished product is no more than 6 or 7 minutes. But then there's a big question with egg matzah. Does the fruit juice cause it to ferment? And it could be fruit juice alone is not a problem. But if you add water, it could be it ferments, it becomes chametz immediately. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that Sfardim, Eidot HaMizrach, have no problem. They can use egg matzah. It's no different than regular matzah. It does not become chametz when you bake it. You look at the Ramah, and I'm quoting from the Ramah, Hilchat Pesach, Simon Tav Samech Bet Sifkatan Dalid. He asks, the English are not, and you shouldn't change. Im lo bishat hadachak letzarchei chole ozakein hatzarich l'seh. You're not allowed to eat egg matzah if you're an Ashkenazi, unless you're an old man or a sick man. What does this psak mean? First of all, I have to tell you what Rav Soloveitchik taught me. I was a kid, I didn't understand. Is it chametz or isn't it chametz? Mimanavshach, if it's chametz, you can't eat it. And if it isn't chametz, why only people my age and sick people? So, interesting question. So the Rebbe explained to us, I'll never forget, I can repeat it word by word, I'll say it in English. I saw yesterday when I speak Yiddish, says, and this is Shari Tfilah of Lawrence, what are we at today? Wow. So I remember the Rebbe saying to us, what do you think? What's Trachman da? That the Ramah is paskining its chametz chas v'chalila. What he's saying is, you have to be stringent. But really it isn't chametz. The Shulchan Aruch is correct. Getting a little trouble here. As I said before, I wish I could bring my microphone over from Israel. The Shulchan Aruch is correct. But if it's objective reasons, b'shat hadchak, all of you know this. Now imagine, who is an old man? I can make the claim when I hit my ninth decade, I want to rejoice, I want to feast with egg matzah. I'd have a problem, because my kids admitted to me this year, you had Acharon Shel Pesach. We didn't have Acharon Shel Pesach. Pesach ended Friday, but you can't become chametz dick till Saturday night. They have to buy back the chametz. So in Israel, all the Ashkenazim, like the Hasidim, what did they do on Shabbos? They prepared knedlach. Some of the Hasidim are so machmeh, they have separate kelim for the Achron Shel Pesach to prepare knedlach. With us in Israel, that last day of Pesach, beans, rice, everyone is feasting, and I brought egg matzah to my daughter's house. And the children tasted egg matzah. They were laughing at us before Pesach. Look what you're eating. And they admitted, the grandchildren admitted, very hard to a grandchild to admit to a grandfather that he's right. Oh my gosh, the egg matzah tam gan eden. No, this is very subjective. You talk about a chola. There's no one over the age of 50 sitting in front of me who can't claim a physical problem. All right, meniscus, reflux, bursitis, I'm not talking arthritis, Ribbono Shel Olam, no one here. They're words I never knew before I turned 75. So you see, this is very subjective. Next Pesach, if I wish, I can make a case. For the Seder, I have Shmura Matzah. And the rest of Pesach, let me enjoy life. I'm old, I'm sick, I Baruch Hashem, alive and kicking. Let me enjoy egg matzah. So you see right away that halacha is subjective. And now let me explain something to you. Those of you who are rabbanim here have studied your Yoredeya. I would change the whole system. What do you get bechinat on in your Yoredeya? Alefel, atefel, milchik a spoon, a fleishik a pot. All that information, you don't have to know by heart. I once heard from the Rav, Mori Rebbe, I heard this in 57. We were studying Masechet Sanhedrin. So the Gemara says, to be a chaver in Sanhedrin, you have to know Kol HaTorah Kula. So this is the Rav speaking, not me. The Rav speaking says, it's impossible. Ein ekenish vissen de ganze Torah baal peh. You can't know the whole Torah. So Rebbe, what does the Gemara mean? Was meint man da? So the Rav said it means you have to know how to access knowledge. Someone has to know where to go, what's in Choshen Mishpat, and what's in Yoredeya, and what's in Ebenezer, and Orechayim, and how to learn, and how to understand. If you asked me to paskin a shaila, to give smicha, I would require one exam, the exam in Kuntres Hashach on how to paskin following Siman Reish Mem Bet in Yoredeya. It is a page and a half. It took me 2.5 years in the Kollel. Did you hear some of those shiurim? 2.5 years on that 2.5 pages to explain to my Talmidim what the Shach is saying in depth. And if you understand the Shach, then you're a posek. Then you can paskin. Then you deserve smicha. You'll find the information. You'll know where to look it up. Now, when you learn Yoredeya, notice time and again in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Ramah, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, the same halacha, and the Shulchan Aruch brings down three different opinions. And he explains why. You talk about subjectivity, just what we mentioned before. Shat hadchak, tension. Something is happening. What does it mean? Orchim, guests are coming. I had a shaila with the meat. Lachatchila, perhaps we should be machmir, stringent. But if guests are coming and I have no time to prepare new food, we can be lenient. Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif, these are examples from the Shulchan Aruch. There's no time to cook the meat again, to make the soup again. Normally we would be stringent. Here we're lenient. This is subjectivity. Hefsed Merubah, you all know the famous stories with Gedolei HaPoskim. There's a big difference if you tell someone to kasher a plate or if you're matrif, if you declare an animal to be treif. And I can tell you, if there's students here who studied with me in Michlala, I'll give you a simple example, halacha l'maseh. In Michlala, the Rebbetzin, Zichrona Levracha, HaRabbanit, Cooperman, used to boast, we not only teach the girls who study here Torah, but we teach them how to be balabusters. And there were, what, like 8 girls in a little apartment with a joint kitchen? No, if there were 8 different cooks in one little kitchen, inevitably there were shilas. So many times, the girls would come to me over the decade and a half that I taught there with shilas with a frying pan. I would always send them to Rav Eberman, the Paskin. Do you know why? Because I'm a Talmud of the Rav. The Rav held that a frying pan, you generally don't put liquid into it. Therefore, it's like an oven. You need a Lieben to clean it out, to kasher it. You have to take a blowtorch. When I was active in the army, I did basic training in 78 and then served until I was 54 years of age, the maximum. So before Pesach, they would call up every rabbi in the army to kasher the entire army. So one time, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein and yours truly, we find ourselves in our Havofene base in Midbar Yehuda, a little kitchen. And we have blowtorches. I mean, we had the army supplies you. You can kasher blowtorches and a big cauldron, and it's heated up with water, with everything you need in and out, big gloves. You shouldn't get hurt by the heat. And a Sfadik kid comes over to us and says, Kvot HaRabbanim, we are from the Eidot HaMizrach, and we use a frying pan to make some treat with matzah and cheese and eggs. Could you kasher this frying pan? So we take the frying pan, we ask him, has it been used the last 24 hours? No. And I'm holding the frying pan, and Reb Aaron is with the blowtorch. Within a half second, there's no frying pan left.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
So for me to paskin, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I have to tell them, you can't do a Lieben, throw the frying pan away. But Ruby Aveman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, Rav Aveman, was from Chicago, from Skokie. He was a Talmud of Rav Regensburg, of Chaim David Regensburg. Bezivik Sheni, he married Rav Chaim Heller's daughter. They were both widowed. I remember I went to visit them in Israel. They lived in Beit HaKerem. You asked about Beit HaKerem. They lived in Beit HaKerem. So he held that you put oil into a frying pan. Oil is like water. Even if it's a minute amount, you kasher it like you kasher any pot and any other pot. Water, lehatiach et hamayim, to boil the water. He's mekil. I sent the girls to him. Why make them throw out a frying pan? Not everyone, you know, is that wealthy when they come to Israel for the year that the girls have a limited amount of budget to spend, and they shouldn't have to spend it on endless new frying pans during the year. So that shows you, of course, their subjectivity. A famous story that resonates throughout Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. There's a Rehov Salant in Yerushalayim. Rehov Salant, it goes down to Meir Sharim from the center of the city. Interesting street. Movies, endless movies have been made there. If you've seen Shtisel, HaHechatzea, it's one of the streets that they can photograph on and get a very nice view. Who is Rav Shmuel Salant? The legendary chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, who outlived everyone. He died in his late 90s. They brought over Rab Chaim Berlin. We spoke about Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin yesterday. They brought over Rab Chaim Berlin to be his assistant to ultimately succeed him. And Rab Chaim Berlin died long before Rab Shmuel Salant, who was so many years older. So they tell a story of Rab Shmuel Salant. A woman came to him, a poor woman, from the old Yishuv HaYashan, and she, by mistake, milk had spilled into the chicken soup, and it was Erev Shabbos. and a poor woman, Hefsid Meruba. And Rav Shmuel Chalan told her to come back in an hour and a half. Well, she went home and came back in an hour and a half, and he told her, you can use the chicken soup mutter. So her children who were with her, Talmidei Chachamim, said to Rav Shmuel Chalan, Rebbe, explain to us what happened in that hour and a half that you were matir. And he told them, I called in the milkman. You don't remember. I remember when I came in Aliyah, we still saw this. They came around in the morning with a big, a large container, a canteen filled with milk, giving out milk with a spoon, with a lefel. I called in the milkman and I swore him to tell the truth and I will not tell anyone. How much water do you dilute the milk with? When he told her how much water, it was batel b'shishim. So there certainly was and is subjectivity in halacha. That's why you have to know the person, you have to know the background, you have to know the circumstances. And that's why Gedolei Yisrael, if you talk about the Rav, I can tell you incidents, but it's not important now, or you talk about Rav Moshe Feinstein, you will sometimes find on certain she'ilot, they paskined one way for one person and another way for another person. And there were reasons why. And it does not contradict. This is what a posek has to understand. This is the kuntres hashach on how to paskin. But now I want to go further and I want to come into Inyana Diyoma, what we're here for this morning. There are two most difficult she'ilot that a Rav can receive. And in these two areas, and you can see all the sources in my new volume, you are obligated to be as subjective as possible, to be lenient if you possibly can within the halachic framework. These are two areas where the question involved is pathetic because the person asking it did nothing wrong whatsoever. When someone mixes up meat with milk, you can get a little upset. Why aren't you more careful? Why don't you mark it carefully? Why don't you think before you act? But here we're talking about the classic aguna and the mamza. When we speak about a classic aguna, and I use the word classic because I'm not referring to the contemporary situation which we have, lo aleinu, in the Western world, where it's a man-made aguna. Do me a favor, I can't hear any speech. It hurts my voice. Talking about the classic aguna. What does the classic aguna mean? The man left his house, kissed his wife goodbye, went on a business trip in Poland, in Russia, in Germany, and never returned. Classic aguna. The man was drafted into the Polish army, the Russian army, the American army, the Israeli army, went to war, and never returned. And here you have a situation where a woman remains the living aguna. The word aguna, it's a Gemara in Baba Batra, Ogen, she is anchored. She has no husband, and yet she can't remarry. And the Bach already said, anyone who's matir an aguna, who can permit an aguna, it's if he built one of the churvat of Yerushalayim. It's like building an entire area in Yerushalayim, because if you're matir an aguna, she can remarry and have children, and the Jewish people have a future. But this is not a small matter. Because aguna is a shetish, if she remarries and the first husband comes back, the children are mamzerim. And you all know the stigma mamzerit does not disappear. It's not a bastard. It's not a child born out of wedlock. A mamzer is from an adulterous relationship or an incestual relationship, and that child and his generations cannot marry a normative Jew or Jewess. It's not a small matter. Our sages throughout the generations did everything possible to find a way halachically to permit the woman to remarry. I give you many examples in the volume, but I'll give you one example orally so it should be more tangible. The yeshiva which I teach for and which I entered in 51, and I must be pretty stupid because I never left. It's the story in Lakewood. They stopped the kid. I stopped a young man going through a red light. Police called him over. He's writing the ticket. He says to him, "How many years are you learning here?" And this young man says, "Oh, about 12 years. And the policeman says, "No wonder you went through the red light. You're pretty stupid if you haven't graduated and you're still continuing 12 years of study." So I've been in yeshivas, Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan, both as a student and a teacher, since 1951. Who is Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan? His nickname was Avi HaAgunot, the father of Agunot. He was matter in his lifetime, thousands of Agunot. Boats sank going to America. Not one body was found. Boats sank going to South America, going to North Africa, South Africa. Jews were running away. Jews were settling. Jews were looking here, there, everywhere. And boats, like planes, capsized. Never found bodies. Without a body, you can't permit the woman to remarry. We're not like secular law. Secular law, every state is different, missing and presumed dead. 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. I don't think there's one state that it takes more than 7 years. We go with Cheskat Chayim. I last saw the person alive. He's still alive. So you have to understand that, logically speaking, this is the Gemara in Yevamah, Daf Kuf Hafalef. Everything is explained in great detail in the Sefer. Logically speaking, if a boat sinks in the ocean, person is dead. Logic is enough to permit the woman. It gives you a majority, what's called the rov. But the rabbis were stringent. Miracles happen. Jonah and the whale. Okay, look at the Gemara in Yevamah. Two stories, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Akiva. They were on boats that capsized, and they're sitting shiva for them, and in the middle of the shiva, they walk in. We're back. What happened? They grabbed a piece of wood from the boat and floated on it. And when a wave came, they held their breath and overcame the wave, rode on top and reached shore. So miracles do happen. You all know that. So it's not enough. Rabbinically, one majority is not enough. In the 1200s, and this too, it's a very interesting halachic story. A boat capsized off the coast of Italy. One of the last of the Balei Tosfos, Meir Yitzchok Meverona, Paskin, 7 years have gone by. They're very reading, 7 years, 5 years. It's in a Mordechai, in Yevamot. 5 years have gone by. The man has not shown. This is a sign of Vad Zichro. This became the halachic rubric of Vad Zichro. He's forgotten. He's no longer alive. None of the rabbis accepted it. How can you say he's no longer alive? The Gemara in Yevamot, a miracle can happen. In modern times, it begins with the Chaim Volozhin, but comes down to Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan, who refined it. We always look for a double majority. A boat crashed. Majority of the people did not survive. 3 years have gone by. He hasn't contacted his wife. We know that they live together amicably. The Mishnah in Yevamot, Shalom Lo v'Shalom La. It's not like a marriage where I was told that within walking vicinity of the synagogue, they told me 5, 6, 7. I can't even remember how many divorces they told me within a year or two. Something's rotten in the state of Denmark. But that's a different talk. We know that it's a nice couple. The first thing the man would have done had he survived was to contact his wife. In Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan's time, you had telegraphs. You had international mail. If he didn't contact his wife, he pulled Reb Yitzchak Meverdun, the concept of Avad Zichro, out of the vault and turned it into a second majority. The first majority, if he was in a boat that crashed, he's not alive. The second majority, if he is alive, he would have contacted his wife by now. If he didn't contact, that's a sure sign he's dead. A double majority stands up against any law in the world, a Torah law, a rabbinic law, and they permitted the women to remarry. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rav Kahana of Warsaw, Jerusalem, after the Holocaust, thousands upon thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not maybe as much as 100,000 plus women were permitted to marry on this very basis. After research was done, and she searched for her husband, and she tried the Red Cross, and the Hayas, and the Jewish Agency, this is before the computer, and lists were circulating, and she brought testimony to the rabbi 3 years after the Holocaust that her husband was last seen waiting online to go into the gas chambers. First majority, anyone waiting online did not survive. Anyone in a death camp did not survive. We know there were miracles. Had he survived, he would have contacted his wife by now, the second majority. I taught children, grandchildren of grandparents who were permitted through this concept of trei rubei, double majority, by Gedolei HaPoskim. You look into Rav Moshe's Trivat, you'll see it with your own eyes, the questions he is dealing with after the Holocaust. So you see here, there is a subjective imperative, do what you can to aid an aguna. When it comes to a mamza, and I quote the Midrash in this book, the Midrash declares, it's a Midrash Rabbah to Vayikra, that the tears of the oppressed refer to the mamza. What did he do wrong? His parents sinned, and he should be declared a mamza? What did he do wrong? So there too, if you know the Gemara at the end of Masechet Kedushin, the fourth perek, Yuchasin, so the Gemara states clearly, Lo yavo mamza b'kal Hashem, a mamza may not enter into the community of God's people. But if he's a safek, a doubtful mamza, he's allowed to enter. The rabbis took on a chumra, a stringency, because of Yuchasin, we should remain pure, that we don't accept a safek mamza. But if you can make two sveikot, three sveikot, you certainly can accept the mamza. And in rabbinic literature, you'll see, for instance, how Rav Moshe Feinstein creates doubts in order to be matir a mamza. One of his interesting doubts is they showed Rav Moshe a ketuvah written in Newark by Edim who signed in English. And Rav Moshe says, if Edim living in Newark at that period, 60, 70 years ago, have to sign in English, it's a certain sign that they're mechallelei Shabbos. If they're mechallelei Shabbos, they're not kosher le'edut. If they're not kosher le'edut, it means there never was a marriage, so that she did not commit adultery, the kid is not a mamza. Reb Moshe goes safek acharei safek, Rav Ovadia Yosef, Gedolei HaPoskim, because the rabbanim within the halachic stress framework, I stress this, because you're living in an era when there's a very serious attack on the halacha by people who call themselves by a certain name, but I refuse to use that nomenclature. I refer to them as neo-conservatives, and that's exactly what they are, 1,000%, but that's a different lecture. But I stress, within the halachic context, we do our best subjectivity to approach it, lachatchila, not to paskin de shayla. but we approach it, what can we do to help the Aguna? What can we do to help the Mamsa? Adkan, the main part. So what have I spoken about? Is there subjectivity in halacha? Next time you buy a box of egg matzahs, look at the side and you'll see they quote the Ramah right on the side of the box in Hebrew and in English. And right there is subjectivity. And I'll ask a different question. If that's the case, can you throw the wrapper away from the egg matzahs? There's a quote from the Shulchan Aruch right on the side of the box you're buying. Subjectivity, Shas HaDechak, Orchim, Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontev, the milk, the water in the milk, Aguna, Mamzerut.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.